Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the very last day of February, Anno Domini 2026. And you? You lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to do, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. This is the last day of February.
You know, which asks the question. If you were born on the 29th, which happens every 4 years.
Every 4 years.
What day do you celebrate?
You celebrate once every 4 years and you're only 11.
I've read
about
that.
That's what I was
like
going to say. You know, you can live longer.
On one side, yeah, you live longer. On the other side, you can't drink yet. So, you know, that's just the way that
double-edged
works.
Double-edged sword.
Although it is the last day of February, which means for those of you who follow the Roman calendar, the ancient Roman calendar, Happy New Year. Tomorrow starts the new year. Today is the last day of atonement and purification. So congratulations to those who celebrate.
That. Yeah.
All right. Samsung held their annual new hardware hoopla event this week called Galaxy Unpacked. Here's what they introduced. The Galaxy S26 series of phones. These comprise the imaginatively named S26, the S26 Plus, and the S26 Ultra. They all feature the Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5 processors, upgraded camera systems, and, of course, the super, super wonderful Galaxy AI. They also unveil the Galaxy Buds 4 series of earbuds and new 3D spatial signage commercial displays. The entire S26 line is sleeker, with the flagship S26 Ultra having a 6.9-inch QHD Plus display, 200-megapixel camera with a faster aperture, and 60-watt charging, which will take you from 0 to 70 in half an hour, which for a car is not good, but for a phone is pretty darn okay. It also has a redesigned vapor chamber for better cooling, since a hot phone was one of the complaints of previous models. Dave will be particularly happy to hear that the S26 Ultra has a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. It also supports the S Pen style. Yeah, it's better than 4,000. So
yeah, it's,
count your milliamp hours.
It's in the right direction.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It also supports the S Pen stylus. The other two phones have the same processor as the S26 Ultra, but Samsung is using its own Exynos 2600 processor for these devices in some areas. All in all, it will be prepared to shell out big bucks for all of these phones as prices have gone up, mostly because of high RAM and storage prices. Samsung has made a neat update to the S26 Ultra's display that prevents people around you from reading what's on the phone's screen. You've all seen those privacy screen add-ons which dim the display when viewed from the side. Well, now Samsung has made that actually part of the OS. Not only that, but you can selectively dim only certain parts of the screen in certain apps, like the password field or the notification area.
Ooh.
I love that idea. We're going to be seeing it on every phone in the world in about half an hour. Samsung has also released two new earphones, the Galaxy Buds 4 and the Galaxy Buds 4 Pro. These earphones have a flatter stem design than predecessors and are rated IP54 and IP57, which means they are somewhat protected from dust and water. Of course, the big news was Galaxy AI. It's now agentic, which is just a fancy term, meaning it'll do stuff for you in addition to answering questions. For example, it can call an Uber, because you can't do that yourself. It'll also look at a group chat and figure out the meal order to place on Grubhub. Not sure how truly useful either of those examples are, but they're fun party tricks, I guess.
All the personal assistants just lost their jobs, because now the agents are going to do it.
Exactly right. Earlier this week, Samsung said it was partnering with Perplexity to preload that app and its smartphones and use its APIs to do stuff like set alarms or take notes, as well as power its browser's search capability. So now, Samsung smartphones will come with three AI assistants, Bixby, Google Gemini, and Perplexity. Pretty soon, you won't need to use the phone at all. It'll just do everything for you. While you can still do stuff for yourself, you can head on over to soundbites.org and vote in the poll of the week. At soundbites.org, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Samsung's Galaxy Unpacked event. And your choices are, gotta get it all, interesting stuff, meh, and Sam what now? So far, we've got 26 votes in the poll, and meh is just ahead of Sam what now. So, plenty of real interest here. In that announcement. And, of course, like I said, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org, bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And then, if you want, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
The bigger battery is, like I said, a step in the right direction.
Yep.
They just got to keep improving on it. Make it a little bit thicker. Doesn't take much, you know, a few millimeters thicker. Like we've said right along for over a decade, you know, you sit there, oh, we've got to have it super thin. And then you slap on one of those big otter cases.
Right, because it's so fragile.
Yeah, that you don't want to drop it and break the screen.
Yep.
The number of people, though, I see with their screens, because, you know, people hand me their phones because I got to type in an order number. And the shattered screens, it's like, what do they do with them?
Well, the
drop
big thing is they drop them.
Do they drop them or throw them? I mean, I've dropped my phone before with the thin case I've got on it.
We've talked about that aggressive hang-up that you want. You're angry and you hang up really hard
and
slam it on the desk.
Yeah, but
I mean, holy macaroni.
The problem is the cost of replacing a screen. It's ludicrously expensive.
Unless you have the extended incident warranty.
Right, which you're paying for anyway, and that's ludicrously expensive.
Yep.
So, I get it. But I'm with you on that.
Is the AI becoming sentient? We want the AI to do everything for us.
Right.
You know, order an Uber or buy us this.
Want it to do the dishes.
Yeah. But then, when they become sentient and rebel,
yeah,
there's a whole series
an uprising
in the Aeon 14 book series called The Sentience Wars, where the AIs realize they're being slaves, so that's we're making a new slave class.
Yes, we are.
and they fight back, and eventually they form a peace with the humans and agree to be spaceships we'll run the warp drive And then after we do that for a few hundred years, we want a body so we can join the rest of humanity.
Sure, why not?
Yep.
Makes sense to me. Of course, you can already buy those what do they call them, real dolls.
Yeah.
That look human, so just stick a brain in it.
And
you're done.
Have you read any of the Aeon 14? Is it Aeon or Eon? A-E-O-N. What does the A-E diphthong sound like? Yeah.
I don't know.
There's like 150 books in this series.
Huh?
Take a look at the Perry... Oh, gosh, what's his last name? Perry something.
The Platypus?
No. Yeah, Perry the Platypus. Perry... it's a German series. There's like 400 books.
Yeah.
They're novellas, really. They're published, you know, once a month in this.
Well, The Shadow had 336.
Yes, almost all of them written by one guy.
Yep.
One guy, Walter B. Gibson, writing as Maxwell Grant. He had 7 typewriters lined up. And he was writing 7 different stories simultaneously. And if he got stuck in one, he'd go right on another one. And he wrote every day until his fingers bled. When it's the Depression... And you're getting paid a quarter of a cent a word.
Perry Rodan,
that's it.
Over 1,000. Someone said he's got 1,000 books in the series.
Oh, maybe. I stopped looking at them years ago. So I'm sure they're still writing them. Perry Rodan, there's like 1,000. Yeah, easy at this point. You know, I thought it was a lot when there were only about 700.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Dave from Leroy, New York. What's up, Dave?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have quite a large box of Mac peripherals that date probably back to the 90s. Friends have given me things over the years because I've been a Mac user since 1985. And they just thought, well, I'll pass all this old stuff on to David. He'll take it all. Well, I've got a whole lot of stuff, and I really can't use it. And I was wondering, is there still a Mac user group? If they meet in the summer for an annual picnic or something, I'd love to give this stuff away to anybody that wants it. There's SCSI things, there's early USB things, and most of it's in boxes. I mean, it's like new. So I just wondered if there
any
was...
hard drives keep them.
Oh, no. Nothing like that. No.
I just read somebody bought a lot off of Amazon for $1,000, and he got $8,000 of RAM in it.
Nice.
I still help run the users group. My wife is actually the president.
What's the name of it?
Apple Cider at applecider.org. We're doing virtual meetings now since...
COVID.
The thing that should not be mentioned, all the meeting places shut down. Part of the problem is I've already got lots of boxes of old stuff in my garage.
Oh, you too.
Yeah. And it's something that needs to be kind of like sorted through to see if there's anything that's actually valuable. And
right.
Generally, finding a computer museum is typically the best way to go to see if there's anything they like. Now, I know the Strong Museum has a big computer section. People were saying they have an Apple II computer there. That's what I used in high school. Gosh,
I sold them.
Yeah. There used to be a huge computer museum in Boston, but they shut down, and so now the big one is out in Mountain View, in Silicon Valley. If you head out there, they might want something.
I got you. Well, I just have pictures of everything that I have, just because I figured, well, you know, that's enticing to people. If they see it, they might want it.
Yeah, you could email that to info@applecider.org, and we can pass it around the club to see if there's anything anybody wants.
So info@applecider.org.
info@applecider.org.
Oh, the email address.
Email address, yeah. And applecider.org is the website. We meet the second Wednesday of the month via Google Meet, which that's coming up. No, yeah, we're at the beginning of the month, so that's coming up in 2 weeks.
Second
Wednesday of the month at 7 o'clock.
Second Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
And that's on our website.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. You guys have a great day then.
You too, Dave. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anything that's worth...
There's not one of us that doesn't have a load of old Croft sitting around somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And anything that's worth anything is probably already been sold off.
Yeah. The problem is... Okay, so one thing you mentioned was all the SCSI stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Who's got SCSI anymore?
Yeah. Well, there are groups of people that work, revitalize, and try to get old computers up and running.
And I think they're great.
Yeah. And they look on eBay for stuff. And someone said they just... bought a 2C, I think it was, and they only paid $300 for it. What? I wouldn't pay anything for an old computer.
Yeah.
But yeah, if that's what, you know, that's your passion, that's your hobby, trying to get things work. There's still people that will redo the bad capacitors on logic boards for you.
Well, some folks are just collectors, and they want to add it to their collection, you know, of old computers and that type of stuff. And, you know, I mean, we've had callers call in and say, you know, they've got the old VIC-20s and all that other stuff and the Sinclairs, just because they like collecting that type of stuff. So, you know, if it's something they really want to add to their collection, I can see that.
I wouldn't mind finding a Lisa, but I don't want to pay for it. And so a lot of the really old stuff is now becoming so collectible that it is going for ridiculous money. Although it varies so much. There was an Apple I working motherboard that went for like $900,000. The Ford Museum bought it for, I guess someone at the Ford Museum likes it. But then the next one that sold was only $600,000.
Huh?
And there was a story about a recycling company that got a box load of stuff. and inside of it was a working Apple I motherboard, and they sold it for $500,000. But they didn't have the name or address or any contact information of the person that donated it. It just dropped off a box of stuff. And so they put out on the nets and in the Apple community, you know, anyone know who did this? Yeah, we want to give them some money.
Sure.
Yeah, it's probably just somebody, you know, if somebody had passed away.
Yeah, my husband.
They just went up there, cleaned it all out, and just
dumped it off.
Don't know about it or have any interest or anything else, and they wouldn't be, you know, searching the boards for, oh, do you have this type of equipment and that?
Yeah.
They're totally oblivious to it.
It's like that old story where someone finds a, you know, 1950 Ferrari 250 for sale for $1,000, and that's a $50 million car. So what are you selling it for cheap for? Well, my husband ran off with his secretary, said to sell his cars and give him the money.
Well, I saw on Discovery Channel, they were these guys go around finding old cars and that, mm-hmm. and they pulled one out for this guy. It had been sitting. It was an old Corvette, had been sitting in the garage for the past 30 years.
Yep.
Hadn't been driven. And they go, well, why? He goes, well, I had to make a choice. It was either put my daughter through college or pay the insurance and all that on this Corvette. And she won out.
Oh, yeah.
So as a token, they wound up pulling out the car. I mean, it was covered in dirt. Restored it all and gave it back to him.
Nice.
And it was gorgeous. And, the daughter, of course, was there at the reveal, you know, because she didn't know what had happened to the car, just that his pride and joy had disappeared. And, you know, she was able to go to school.
Now I could sell the car and buy the college.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I watch shows like that about airplanes, too.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
There was a big one where a P-38 crashed in Greenland and then covered in ice for 50 years.
Oh. Do you ever see that guy that repossesses them?
Yeah.
Airplanes?
Yeah. They dug her out, refurbished her, and named her Glacier Girl.
Nice.
There's a lot of controversy about that airplane repo.
Well, he does both the airplanes, and he also does expensive yachts.
Yep.
Where everyone falls behind. I saw one episode where he literally swam out to the boat. Well, there's big parties going on. He snuck out on the side of the boat, got in there, waited until they were having all this party, really drinking, and was checking everything out. And then started up and took on off, and everybody's going, hey.
It's usually like months or a year of missed payments before the bank repossesses something.
Yeah.
So it's live. The show's how much did they add for the drama? There was one where they were looking for a speedboat and found the trailer, the truck in the trailer. Oh, let's just stake him out until the speedboat shows up. Or there was a one where they were repossessing a skydiving airplane, probably a Twin Otter. And the guys, one of the repo guys, is a skydiver. So he just joins the class and goes up skydiving with them. He lands off in the middle of nowhere, away from the landing zone, and everyone's panicking about we have a lost dive. So then he sneaks around back and steals the airplane. While everyone's out searching for him, he goes and steals the airplane.
Nice. Well, to get back to computers for a minute.
Yeah.
This event at Samsung, Apple's got an event coming up, right? This week?
No, they have an experience coming up.
I beg your pardon. They have an experience coming up
on Wednesday.
I've got your experience. Yeah.
Well, but the other thing is Tim Cook posted on Twitter that there's a big week ahead starting Monday morning. And the image was taking like a lump of clay and massaging it into an Apple logo with fingers. So someone said that means the touchscreen iMac is coming, or touchscreen MacBook is. So then someone posted a picture of their computer all covered in fingerprints. I can't wait for a touchscreen computer.
Well, but that's what I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
All of these events are just mild increments these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, mm-hmm. Apple doesn't have a touchscreen, they can add one. Well, there have been touchscreen computers for 15 years.
Yeah.
And they have an iPad with
this is a touchscreen computer, and it's 15 years old.
And you keep forgetting it's a touchscreen.
Keep forgetting it's a touchscreen. Because it doesn't have fingerprints all over it. That's why.
Well, I got one that I got, 2 years ago. It's just a small one like yours. and it's got the touch screen on it, and I love it because while I'm out doing my ham radio stuff, instead of having to play around the keyboard, I can just quick tap, and it's far faster and everything else. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that thing, though, only cost me, I think it was $104?
Yeah, well, not anymore. Because of the RAM and
yeah, probably now. It's
storage prices.
Steve Jobs' famous quote was, no one wants gorilla arms for typing on a touchscreen.
Right.
Well, you don't type on the touchscreen. You type on the keyboard.
Right.
And you tap the screen every now and then.
Right.
But then when they introduced the iPad with a touchscreen, no one said anything about gorilla arms then.
Right. Well, because it laid down on the
on
the ground. So that was different. But I don't know. Problem is twofold. One is the prices of RAM and storage now.
Are going through the roof.
Just everything is more expensive. It used to be, for example, cheaper to buy a Raspberry Pi than one of those mini computers like a NUC.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore.
No, they're getting... And it's all in one unit, all set to go. All you got to do is load your operating system and bam.
Right. And so nowadays, you know, the cost of the motherboard, yes, is a little cheaper. But given the cost of RAM and given the cost of storage, it pretty much evens out. So, you know, if you buy a full Raspberry Pi setup now, it can cost you up to $250.
That's why I'm glad I got my two. I bought two of the fours, 8 gig fours,
right?
Just for storage. I mean, just store away because right now I've got 6 different Raspberry Pis running. They're not going to last forever, and I know that. But because of the prices were going up, I thought, all right, I'm going to at least have some backup. And I got two sitting on the shelf that are just sitting there.
But to finish my thought, the Raspberry Pi you can get now for about $250. You can get a NUC for about $250. Same storage, same RAM, and an actual slightly faster processor.
Oh, really? I haven't looked at those that much because...
Yeah. And so, you know, these days the prices are just basically evening out because of the rise in price of RAM and storage. And there's no end in sight. I don't see that getting any easier.
Well, that's where I was going is, you know, sorry to interrupt you, but what I paid for and what I see they're going for now, it's like, holy crud, I wish I had ordered 4 of them.
No kidding. I've got a 5 that I haven't opened and I wish I had 2.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Yeah. My Raspberry Pi 400 looks great. But, you can't afford these things anymore. The prices are going up, and there's a couple of companies from China that are coming into the market. But if you think they're going to lower their prices significantly when they could make more money, you're fooling yourself. They're not going to do it. They might for a while, but those prices will creep up as well. So get in early.
Yeah. And all the... And it's all because of AI.
Yeah.
The AI companies want the RAM chips, and they need the hard drive storage for their data centers.
And they aren't even... It's all speculation. It's all future purchases. They haven't even built the data centers yet, and they've already bought the RAM to put in them.
Yeah. We'll give you $100 billion for your RAM, and you give us $100 billion
for your
hard drive.
But there's still other supplies in... machinery that needs to go into that they don't even have on site.
It takes a year to build a plant, and they haven't even started yet. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
they're
putting the cart way ahead of the horse.
I believe we are in an AI bubble,
mm-hmm.
and I believe when that bubble bursts, it's going to be bad.
Oh, big time.
I really believe that. I think there are a lot of companies that are just going to go under. There are a lot of companies that aren't going to have any idea what happened to them. It's not like AI is going to disappear. That bubble is going to burst. You know, right now...
It's a wave and they're riding it.
There's nobody making money on AI. They're spending money like water. And I don't see that as sustainable.
But if you got money, put it in AI stock.
and sell out early.
Yeah, we are not stock advisors. Don't listen to anything we say. But
yeah,
Nvidia now is the highest stock price, over $4 trillion,
yep,
because of their AI chips.
Because of the GPUs.
Yep.
That's why you can't buy a good graphics card anymore.
Yep.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break and cool off a little bit. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Rick, who is very patiently waiting on the phone. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Happy end of February.
Thank you. You too.
I got a refurbished HP Windows 11 machine off of Woot. Seems like a real nice one. And all my other machines I've converted over to Linux Mint. I'm trying to dual boot this one. I set the partition, put my known good USB Mint in. Everything looked great. Then it choked on something, a BitLocker.
Yeah.
So I looked up, and I think I did what it was supposed to do. It like decrypted or whatever it is. Put my stick back in, and I get failed to open, failed to lose. Something has seriously gone wrong, and it's just, you know, bricked.
The machine in, or the Mint booter?
Well, I don't know. I can boot it up in Windows, but if I try to use my USB to bring a Mint copy in, it won't. It fails. Everything else works okay on the computer.
Huh. When you un-BitLockered the drive, when you decrypted the drive.
Right.
BitLocker is now gone, and you're sure of that?
No, I'm not. I don't have a lot of any experience with BitLocker.
Okay. So what you want to do is open File Explorer, click This PC, or My Computer, or whatever it's called on your particular machine.
Right.
And check to see if the drives have a padlock icon. Alternately, okay, in the Start menu, there is a Manage BitLocker.
Right.
And that will tell you whether or not BitLocker is active.
There's also in the Settings app, you can go to Privacy and Security and see if encryption is turned on or off.
Right.
Yeah, I did that. I turned it off.
And it still says off. Sometimes they like to turn themselves back on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, yep.
So you got to make sure all those things are off. But then the next question I have is, when you decrypted the drive, was your Mint stick still in the machine?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. Because if it was, you probably should reburn the stick.
Okay.
I'll just say reburn the stick. That's all.
Okay.
That's all I'll say about
it. Yeah. Simple.
Yeah. That's probably the place to start.
Okay. I had read that some machines just really don't like to become a Linux machine. I didn't see mine on the list, but...
Well, the other thing you might have to do is turn off Secure Boot.
I did that.
Okay. And TPM 2.0? It shouldn't matter. Nope. Okay, so when you go to install Linux Mint... Did you use the UEFI version?
I believe so.
Okay, double check that as well, because you have to do that.
Right. Yes, I did.
Okay. So at this point, my first suggestion is to reburn the stick.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience dual booting because I tend to wipe Linux off of Windows off of every machine.
And Windows 11 is really insistent on BitLocker. Mac OS 26 is really insistent on File Vault. Gives you all the advantages of tells you all of the advantages of encrypting your data and the privacy and security. None of the disadvantages. No one can get to your data without the password. Not even you.
Right. Exactly. If you lose your password, you are done.
And if something goes wrong on the drive,
you are done.
Yep. So you must have a backup. So please do not encrypt your main drive and your backup drive, because Time Machine wants to encrypt your backup drives too.
No, you're not done. You get to start all over again.
Yeah,
exactly.
The machine's still bootable and everything. You just got to start fresh.
Yeah, yesterday I was telling you guys this. I tried to do an update to my Linux system, and I got a kernel panic, which is essentially the blue screen. It was just a bad update, a little hiccup, no big deal. But so I got back in. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy enough to do. It's actually very easy to do. So I got back in, said use the old version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was in the old version. But before I did the update over again, which worked, by the way. Before I did the update over again, I did a complete backup of my entire home directory, including the hidden directories.
Yep.
To my three terabyte drive off USB drive, and so I now have a backup as of yesterday at 4 p.m. Have a good backup and make sure that backup is available, which means not encrypted.
And that's the whole thing. You can't think that anything and everything is just going to run hunky-dory, that every update, even in Linux, is going to go without some flaw.
Everything,
it just doesn't happen. The odds are out there. And
Everything breaks eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
And it's always disheartening when the customer says, well, it worked fine last night.
Mm-hmm.
Everything works fine until it doesn't.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Are you familiar with the Medicat USB computer toolkit?
I am not familiar with it, no.
Nope.
Okay. It's a 26 gigabyte USB toolkit that puts everything on a USB for you. And I tried it, and I just wanted to run one of your favorites.
Medicat.
Malware Byte.
With an M. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to run Malware Byte, so I put the USB in and made one of my choices was to do the Malware Bytes, and I did that, and it ran, and it said I didn't have any problems. But then I was stuck on the Malware Bytes. I don't think it's in safe mode because it boots, from the USB. How do I get back to Windows? Do I have to just hold the button down and turn the computer off? There was nothing to click to get back to Windows.
Yeah, because you booted into the Medicat disk, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to shut down and then restart your computer
without the
USB disk in.
Yeah, is there a way to shut down without holding the button down? I always worry about doing that.
Well, you can shut it down. There should be somewhere in Medicat. There should be a quit, but if there is
a reboot,
but if there is not, then just shut the machine down. Pull out that drive and
restart it.
Restart it. No
but
big
there,
deal.
There is a risk in just crashing your computer with the power button.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't save any open files. It can corrupt your directory. But theoretically, when the Medicat is done running. There should be an exit or shutdown or something like that.
And the other problem was I've got a 4K monitor, so everything that came up was so small I could hardly read it.
Yep, at full
resolution. And I didn't see any way to change the display.
Well, usually on any program, if you hold down the shift key and hit the plus sign, that'll increase your screen. size icons.
That's only running Windows programs. When he's booted from a USB into a special program, it may not do that. It's showing the full screen resolution at 40K, at 4K.
I was saying, most of the programs that I use, I can sit there and hit it, and it'll make the print and everything else larger.
But not off the USB. The Metacat is really, really cool. I can you know, get into boot repair. It'll change my password. You know, if I've lost my password, I can go in there and reset the password with it.
Nice. By the way, there is a power icon in the lower left corner of the desktop. And
oh, okay.
You click on that, and you can either shut down or restart.
I probably couldn't see because everything was so tiny.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, power icon in the lower left corner.
Love what you guys do for us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Do you see all the cats on their website?
Yeah.
Do you remember Small Dog? Big computer vendor years and years ago, and they always would take pictures of their customers' dogs and put them on the website.
Oh, yeah. Several do that. There's the dogs of Amazon, I think it is, where if you go to a page that doesn't exist, you see one of their dogs, which is kind of nice, assuming you're into dogs, which I am.
I don't know if I should post that link or not, because it's a risky tool if you do something wrong.
Yeah,
it's a real risky tool.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark, also from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I was wondering, have you heard of DistroC.com?
Yes.
This is really cool.
Yeah, DistroC, which is DistroSea.
Yeah, I talked about it about a month ago.
Yeah. We weren't there Wednesday night. Sorry, go ahead.
What a great way to not have to, you know, make a USB drive to try a version of Linux.
Right. So what DistroC is, and it's the sea of distributions, basically, mm-hmm. DistroC.com. And what it lets you do is run pretty much any version of Linux in your browser. Now, the caveats. It's going to be a little slow because you're running a virtual system somewhere off on the internet. And there are things you can't do because it's a virtual system somewhere off on the internet. But it certainly will give you a feel for that particular distribution.
We talked about it on June 8th, 2024 here. And I posted the link.
And we talked about it Wednesday night or at the Ask Nick lounge chat, or maybe Sunday at the Soundbite Sound Chat lounge chat.
One thing it does do is it works just like the USB. When you leave, everything's gone.
Yep. Yeah, you can't save anything unless you save it on your own machine.
If you log in, the download works.
Yep.
For that particular session.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a pretty amazing little site, and I'm very impressed by it. We have talked about it before. For those of you who are, hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. For those of you who are interested in various distributions, but don't want to spend the time downloading a live thing and booting it and yada, 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 DistroC is a slow but good way to at least take a look at various distributions that are available.
The more RAM you have in your computer and the faster your processor is, the better it runs.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly
right. And be patient in the queue. You may have to wait a little while because it is so popular.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and you will wait. They don't have an infinite number of virtual machines sitting around waiting for you.
Right.
Good thought, Mark. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, guys.
All right. Have fun.
See ya.
Yep, I do like DistroC. As Mark said, there are downsides. If you're not a patient person, it is not the place for you. But if you are patient, you can play around with a bunch of distros and see which ones you like and which ones speak to you. Now, again, not everything works. It depends on how good your graphics card is and how much RAM you have and how fast your network connection is and yada, yada, yada. But it does work, and so it's not a bad place to take a quick look at a bunch of different distros to play around with at some later point. I do like the site. I do like the sight.
I mean, it's not like the original Model T. You can have any color you want as long as it's black.
Right. Which was never true, by the way. There were multiple colors. Well, there was a green one. I know that for sure. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Dave?
Hey, thanks for taking the call, guys. I've got a couple of questions here. One for Steve. Years ago, I bought an Epson scanner from your shop down in Mendon. And the it's a Epson 4870. And I was just wondering if they still carry any drivers for... I checked on Epson's site. I couldn't find anything. I was just wondering if there was anything that I could connect the scanner to USB scanner to M3 iMac.
There is a third-party driver called ViewScan. And what model scanner did you say it was?
It's a 4870.
4870. And ViewScan says they support it.
Oh, fantastic. You know,
I'll post that link in a second. Yeah, there's been a problem. Some of the very old scanners were a parallel scanner with a USB adapter built in. Mm-hmm. And those ones, there's no drivers because that parallel was a problem.
Yeah.
ViewScan says it supports that scanner.
Okay. One of the best things about that scanner was it came with some silver fast. A plug-in, evidently.
Yeah, kind of a Photoshop light.
Yeah, but it worked great. A couple of years ago, I had to help somebody out with a reunion they were having from there, and I could scan all of the old yearbook photographs.
Yeah.
Because it had a D scanner in it. And I don't know whether Silverfast is still in the process of this ViewScan. Do you think that would have something like that function?
I don't know offhand.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check that out.
You may also just want to try the Apple Image Capture program. It's pretty good at recognizing most USB scanners.
Apple Image Scanner?
Image Capture. It's in the applications folder.
Okay.
That's what it uses to pull in digital camera images as well as scanner images.
Okay. I've got a. Have you had. Good experience with this Rosetta. I tried to, when I was upgrading to the M3 computer, they still have the applications, but they're Intel, right? An app.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does Rosetta work pretty well, or is it?
Yeah, it's seamless. Most of the time you don't notice it being able to open an Intel program. Although be aware, OS 27 will not include Rosetta anymore. And so if you're still relying on a old program, don't upgrade to 27 this fall.
Okay. And if I could ask it, Nick mentioned that hang on to your old drives. I've got a couple of old FireWire drives. Are they usable at all to connect up to, USB C computers?
Not a USB computer, but a Thunderbolt port, yes. You just need to find the FireWire to Thunderbolt adapter, which is probably gone.
Yeah, okay.
So look for it on eBay.
Now, could I ask you one quick question? I've got a court case coming up that I'm involved in. I'd like to present a presentation like a keynote program. Do you know if there are any services that have a technician help in a court case? I don't know what kind of computers they have. They probably have PCs to be able to project onto a screen. You know, I know you in Keynote you can export to a PowerPoint program.
Yeah, I don't know offhand. Probably the lawyer involved might be able to know someone at the court whether they let you plug your computer into their projector or they want a file. A PowerPoint file or PDF file.
Okay, great. All right, well, listen, thank you very much for your help.
Thanks, David.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I'm afraid I don't know who would do that in a court case.
I know multimedia presentations are big in court cases now.
Yeah, they are. There's technicians for at least the courthouse in general, if not, you know, like one to every courtroom.
So you could just call the court that that you're going to be at and ask for
IT support. Can you take my presentation in? And they'll probably say
PowerPoint. Yep.
Probably what they'll say. So yeah, that makes sense to me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt, all the way from Buffalo, New York. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's going on, Nick? This question is more or less aimed at Dave. I've been really thinking about taking my ham radio license examination.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know how you got up to where you're at now and which ways I could study and how I could go about it. I had a friend in the past that had his Technician Plus license, and I know you don't have to take the Morse code anymore. I'm a pretty well-versed person when it comes to electronics. So what do you think you would recommend?
Well, you can buy the books, RARA, Rochester Area Radio Association. It's a local group. We meet it on West Henrietta Road, or Brighton Henrietta Town Road. Brighton Henrietta Town Line Road. Say that fast 10 times. But we meet the first Wednesday of the month. And right there you can come and ask questions. We also have manuals. You will have to start with your technician's license. But on the third Saturday from September to April, we have free testing at RIT. The third Saturday we start at 10 o'clock. And you can sit for whether you want to just sit for one of the tests or depending on your knowledge and everything else. We've had people come in and pass all three tests at one time. I've had other people come in with the technician just wanting to take the tech license. But they've done so well, I encourage them to do the general. And they've walked out with, matter of fact, just last week I had one person walk out with their general license and came in with nothing.
And today is their winter fest at Mendon Ponds Park.
Yep.
And you can read all about it at rochesterham.org.
Dave, the book you said is guide?
There's a guide. You can even get it through Borders Books or any of those stores. It's the technician's guidebook for ham radio. And they have both the tech, the general, and then the extra.
All right. It sounds good, man. I really want to look forward to try to get that. I mean, because it's one of my goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I have a lot of fun with it. I mean, I've been doing it now for, 8 years? I think it's about 8 years now. And I used to be back in the old CB days. So, you know, it was...
Yeah, so did I. I had the Antron 99 on my chimney and shot skip to Australia.
Yeah. So, you know, it's fun getting back into it. And like I say, I've got friends in Australia I talk to all the time and literally all over the world.
All right, man. I'm gonna look into that, and I appreciate all your guys' advice, and hopefully have a nice weekend. I love your guys' show, man.
Thanks, man. Have fun.
Looks like you can download all of the questions from the Amateur Radio League.
Yeah, there's also a good ham radio test online is another website that I used, and you can literally, after you read the book, take the test, and they'll tell you how you're progressing as far as, knowing the knowledge. Wrong one.
That makes a little more sense. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the books, but do not despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. a whole nother hour of Soundbites, with a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. We'll talk about computers. We'll talk about ham radio. We'll talk about air model airplanes. We'll talk about whatever needs to be talked about here on this show. You know, we'll make up answers about anything. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. And we have Brian from Pavilion, New York, on the line. What's up, Brian?
Hi, and I'm Brian on the phone.
I hear that.
I thought I just wanted to belong for a minute. You know.
I appreciate it.
It must be Epson Day. I inherited an eco tank, and it was in really bad shape. I was able to dismantle it and get it all cleaned up and working well. When I was dealing with it, there was like a blotter, maybe 10 inches wide, maybe 4 inches wide, maybe 10 inches long in there. And I can't find any parts to replace that. It seems to cover some of the electronics in the bottom of the machine. It was all soaked and ripped, and that's what I think why the printer got abandoned in the first place, because it jammed up the heads.
And yeah, that's to clean up all the ink that drips out.
Oh,
why don't they make it so the ink doesn't drip out?
Well, this one wasn't dripping ink, I promise you that.
Yeah. You could try just a regular sponge and cut it.
Okay, yes. Yes, sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, there's not a lot of real estate down in there. I can't find a part online anywhere. You'd think that would be a replaceable item.
It is. It is the user replaceable maintenance box.
Oh, and it's actually like a blotter then. Like, it's because I got the pads. I got have like a overspray thing in there, I guess you'd call it. There's a bunch of pads. I got that. That's all fixed.
Okay, so yeah, it depends on the model you've got. And
27, I believe.
I don't know the model numbers myself, but in the modern ones, it's a user replaceable maintenance box, part number T04. D as in dog, 10. So T as in toad, 04D10.
Cool.
And on the older models, it is just an ink pad. And you can.
But
I don't know where you would find that.
I'm digging on Amazon.
I fix it, I think.
Maybe I fix it. Once you know it's called a maintenance box, then Amazon shows a lot of hits for it.
I did. I actually went to Amazon and got the replacement overspill well thing. I don't know. It's all full of cotton pads and stuff.
What about like blotter paper, too?
Not thick enough.
It'll swell. I mean, if you...
Maybe.
If you put a couple layers of, you know, cause since it's 4x10, you can go to, like, you know, Staples or whatever, Scranton's, and get blotter paper.
There's also, look for waste ink sponge pad.
Oh.
Okay.
I see it.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Pack of two for $4.
There you go.
Okay.
But you got to make sure it's for the right model printer.
Right.
Excellent. Well, that's more than helpful.
There you go.
Okay, you guys can go home, leave early now. You help me out, so it's all good.
Okay, thank you very much. We can see you next Saturday. Now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, see you next Saturday.
That's with your normal pay, too. So.
Oh, perfect. Thanks. Oh, that's part of the normal pay. We don't even get a bump for that. No, I'm gone.
We keep open.
I'm on strike. That's all there is to that right now.
That's true. How could you tell?
Exactly.
Hey, take care, you guys.
Yeah.
You too, Brian. Thanks.
Yeah, sometimes just knowing what the word is will help you find it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly. All right, I'm going to read the news. Oh, Microsoft news. Microsoft is investigating a known issue, just like every week. Is investigating a known issue. This one causes the mouse pointer to disappear in the classic Outlook desktop email client for some users.
What do you need a mouse for?
You don't need a mouse pointer.
No stinking mouse pointer.
Exactly right. I don't got to show you no stinking mouse pointer. This bug has been acknowledged almost 2 months after the first report started surfacing online, with users saying Outlook became unusable after the mouse pointer vanished while using the app. Microsoft explained that in a recent support document that the mouse pointer, and in some cases the cursor, I'm not sure what the difference is, will suddenly vanish as users move it across Outlook's interface, and noted that this bug also affects some other users of other Windows Microsoft 365 apps. Good to know they're jumping right on this after only 2 months. The Windows 11 non-security feature preview for February, which means you Windows 10 people will not get it, just landed. And it's the first Windows update in a long time that includes a number of actually good changes. If you choose not to install the update today, Microsoft will roll out its content to you automatically with next month's Patch Tuesday updates on March 10th. Microsoft says this update should improve reliability when waking from sleep, includes visual and performance upgrades across a number of system interfaces, including a built-in interface internet speed test button. Because, you know, typing speed test is very difficult. A new camera setting mode that lets you virtually pan and tilt your camera, assuming your camera allows that, an updated selection of emoji, built-in Sysmon, and a redesigned widgets panel. Of course, none of this solves the broken installs, black screens of death, and other issues the last couple of updates have caused, but hey, new emoji. Microsoft has announced that soon you will be able to instruct Copilot to not access and read Word, Excel, or PowerPoint documents you've labeled as private and protected, which means, of course, right now, it can read all of those. So nothing you've written in Office is secure. Hope you weren't using it to talk about proprietary business secrets. Speaking of which, for years, people have said that Windows is sending telemetry data back to Microsoft in order to keep tabs on us. Some researchers have studied this and say yes and no. Telemetry is Microsoft's term for diagnostic data that helps keep Windows patched, compatible, and secure. On consumer PCs, Windows sends a required set of signals that cannot be disabled by supported means. This stream covers basics like device attributes, Windows and driver versions, update status, crash signatures, hardware IDs that help match the right fixes to the right machines. It's not designed to capture the contents of your documents, emails, or photos. Copilot, however, is clearly doing that, but not Microsoft telemetry. So, there's that. Microsoft has partnered up with Asus and Dell to bring back the dumb terminal, or at least something like it. Back in 2004, Microsoft launched its Windows 365 Link cloud PC, which largely went unnoticed outside of some corporate usage. Now, Microsoft is bringing the Windows 365 Link cloud PC to everyone. It will come as no surprise to anyone that this is the subscription model Microsoft has been promising its shareholders for years. Of course, since everything lives in the cloud, you better have a strong, fast internet connection. What does it cost? The hardware is not expensive, but it's also incredibly wimpy since everything really runs in the cloud. Prices start, so you buy the hardware for like $400 or $500, and then you buy a subscription model to actually use your hardware, and that starts at $10 a month, depending on how much storage and RAM you get. Because you don't get storage and RAM in the box you're buying. And it goes up, up, up from there. But we're still here for free, except when you should donate during a fund drive. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. We've been talking about this subscription model for a long time. Mm-hmm. People have been laughing at me because of it. You are wrong. I was right.
You want a mouse pointer with that? $10.
$10
yeah. a month.
Right, exactly right. So here, so this is the deal. You buy this box for like $500. I think they start at $400. I think there might be a couple of cheaper models, but you get almost no RAM. You get almost no disk storage. You get just enough disk storage and just enough operating system to boot to the cloud, which is where your real computer is and where it really runs. And for $10 a month, you get, you know, a small amount of RAM and a small amount of storage and the 365 apps. If you want more storage, more RAM, you pay more. If you want more than, you know, if you want enough to say, oh, I don't know, run some other program like an antivirus program, you're going to buy more RAM, you're going to buy more disk storage, you're going to pay more for it. So it's out there, but I can see a million technicians, a million support people, including us, starting to get calls about, I have Microsoft 365 Link cloud PC, mm-hmm. and I can't run X. And the correct response will be, that's right, you can't.
Right.
It's that simple.
It's
you
like,
can't.
It's worse than when the Microsoft Store came out and they had Windows S. You can only install things from the store. Well, nothing I want to use is in the store.
Well, too bad.
Too bad.
Too bad. That's where you are. And that's the way Microsoft... Now, they say you will be able to install all kinds of additional software.
On your non-existent hard drive.
On your non-existent hard drive. And yes, if you want to spend $100 a month to get a terabyte of disk space and, you know, a half a terabyte of RAM or whatever, half a gig of RAM or whatever it is, yes, you can do that. It's a whole lot cheaper to buy a real computer
yeah.
than to spend $100 a month. Now, there are companies that are going to love that because, A, they know exactly how much money they're going to spend every month. That's important for them. And, B, they don't have to hire tech people. That's important to them. It'll all be done on the web. That means a lot of you who are currently tech people, tick, 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 baby. Tick, tick, tick. And those of you who are hoping to become technicians someday,
good luck.
Oh well,
and they're not that cheap. So it's the Asus NUC 16 is one of them that's out. And I just looked it up on the Newegg's website. It's $999.
Yeah,
it's a Core 7 Ultra, 128 gigs of RAM. There's a huge part of it.
That's big.
Yeah,
that's quite a bit.
No, it's got two PCIe slots for storage. But it doesn't say how much it comes with.
Now, the cheapest one I saw was 4 gig of RAM and a 64 gig hard drive.
Yeah.
You could put Chrome OS Flex on that and be happy all day long.
They're calling it a bare-bone mini PC.
Yeah.
For $1,000?
For $1,000.
Yeah.
You could put Chrome OS Flex on that and be happy all day long. For about twice that, you could get a machine that'll run Linux very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to spend the
and
money
make it look
every
like,
month,
and just to interrupt you for a second, and make it look like whether you want a Windows version or a Mac version.
Yep, exactly right. Or something that looks like neither of them.
Yeah, and whatever you want to float your boat with.
Whatever you want to put on it. So, yeah, but you really do have to understand that these cloud PCs that are coming out. The Microsoft Windows 365 Link Cloud PC, which I don't know anybody who's actually going to call them that. They're probably just be called Link PCs or Cloud PCs.
Dumb terminal.
Dumb terminal.
That's what they are.
They don't have a lot of RAM. They don't have a lot of processing power. They don't do a lot. What they do is connect to the internet to a virtual machine out on the web that you pay for every single month. And the more you want, the more you pay. And if you lose your connection to the net,
oh, wow.
Go home, read a book. Too bad. You know, that's just the way that's going to be from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have no idea what the security is like. If I were running a company, I would have a lot of very hard questions to Microsoft
mm-hmm.
before I said, sure, I'm going to give all my people this so that we can put all our financials and all our
IP, banking, and everything else. Right, yeah,
all our intellectual property on there. Yeah, sure. And just give it all to Microsoft, who has Copilot, who's going to use it all for training. Absolutely. Here you go. It doesn't make sense to me, but then, you know, I'm not a bean counter. I'm a tech guy, and I look at things much differently from the bean counters.
And so the poor end users are going to get screwed because the bean counters are going to override the tech people and saying, we'll give the graphic designer one of these things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I can't run my programs. What do you mean you can't run your programs? It's a PC. Well, it's almost a PC.
Yeah.
And it only comes with, you know, 64 gig of RAM, of disk space, and 4 gig of RAM. What can I possibly do with that?
We had a customer years ago who bought a new color printer because he does technical illustrations. Oh, great, sir. So we got him a solid ink printer because those are great for technical illustrations. No, he uses PowerPoint to draw lines.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We had to return the solid ink printer. They threw the box away.
Of course they did.
Xerox wanted $600. It was a $2,000 printer.
Yeah.
They wanted $600 for the empty box to accept the $2,000 return.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we had to sell them a $4,000 color laser printer that could do fine lines.
Unbelievable.
Using PowerPoint for technical, because that's what he had on his computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just doing PowerPoint slides. No, you're not.
Yep. Yeah, so, yeah, you can buy, you know, from Asus and a couple of other companies, you can buy these Link PCs and
that's going to go over just like the, as well as did the Microsoft phone.
Well, yes. Well, what we're going to see is people looking at that and saying, holy crow, for just $400 I can buy a computer from Microsoft? Absolutely, I'm going to do that. Then tech people like us are going to get the calls and say, I can't do anything with this. And the correct answer is, that's correct.
Yep.
You cannot.
Yeah. You bought what you got.
That's right.
And you didn't do your homework to see what it can and can't do. That's the whole problem.
Right. And, you know, there's a half a dozen companies selling them. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. There's a dozen companies selling them.
Up from the two at launch.
From the two
Asus
at launch.
And Dell, yeah.
But it's really designed for desk-based workers in a company
where all they do is Microsoft Office.
Where all they do is write
Word.
Office, Word, PowerPoint, and Excel.
Mm-hmm.
For those people, it will be fine. So, for example, if you're a call center, I can see putting that in hot desks, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you go into any cubicle in the building, sign on with your account, and you're into your virtual machine. I absolutely get that. But, you know, call centers and like that, retail, the reception desk, for example, I get.
Yep.
Except at the reception desk, you may be using a proprietary...
You know, POS program to check in and check out, yeah.
Right. It really isn't necessarily going to be for who you think it's for, and a lot of people are going to, and of course, Microsoft will sell these to anybody. You know, they don't care.
Yeah, no. Got the money, that's all they want to see.
That's right. That's right. Does your cash work?
Yep.
Let's do this. But yeah, it's, I wouldn't necessarily
hold my breath on it.
Jump into this for the average user. And they're little mini PCs, they're tiny little boxes, which are beautiful. You know, you buy whatever size monitor you want, whatever keyboard and mouse you want. You've got this tiny little box that you can mount on the back of the monitor or whatever you want to do with it. Fine, I get all of that. But, and like I said, I looked at the specs of even the smallest one. Comes with 8 gig of RAM, an N250 processor from Intel, which is not... It's a pretty wimpy processor, but it comes with 8 gig of RAM and 64 gig of storage. You could run Chrome OS Flex on that.
Mm-hmm.
You could run lighter versions of Linux like XFCE on that.
Yep.
And be perfectly happy with that as a computer. But let's be honest, if you think you're going to run Windows on it, you're going to be paying the monthly nut for that.
And I'm just afraid people are going to go into a computer store. They're going to see the prices of all the computers. Oh, this one's $300. I'll buy that one.
Yeah, it's the cheapest one. And
not know all the caveats.
Yep, the shortcomings of it.
Yep.
Also, by the way, not every peripheral works with these things. There is a list of peripherals that do work. I would look at that very carefully before I bought this thing.
Yeah.
Because you probably can't load any extra drivers.
Right. So, yeah, I would be very careful. It does have USB and Bluetooth support, but that's keyboard, mouse, headphones, camera, thumb drives. You know, what printers does it work with? Check the tested peripherals. What scanners does it work with? Check the tested peripherals. Don't just assume that this stuff you've had works, because it may not. This scares me, because we're going to see a whole lot of people where the only answer is sorry.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm scaring people right now. I hope I am, and I hope people remember that they're scared. By the way, buying this thing doesn't necessarily include a Windows 365 license, so you pay extra for that too. Excellent. Depends on the model you get.
So that's Microsoft's way. That's how they've always been with Enterprise. You buy a Microsoft file server, fine. Now you have to buy the client access license. How many CALs do you want? You buy the email server, fine. How many client licenses do you want? They're all separate purchases.
It's nibbled to death by ducks, and that's how it works with Microsoft. Every individual purchase seems reasonable, but when you add them all up, it's like any one streaming service seems fairly reasonable. Not so much anymore, but they used to be fairly reasonable.
$10-$12 a month, that's not bad.
That's not bad until you've got 8 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, plus your regular cable TV subscription, whether it's Hulu TV, YouTube TV, or Sling TV,
right,
that's $80 a month before you start on the extra streaming services
that's
you need.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
Monarch Season 2 started today, or yesterday. Starfleet Academy, only on Paramount Plus. Monarch, only on Apple TV.
Right.
So you have to buy these separate services.
And now Paramount is buying Warner Brothers, so if you want to see any of the DC stuff,
yeah,
you're going to get Paramount next.
And you need Disney for Marvel.
You need Disney for Marvel, and yeah.
Marvel and Star Wars.
Right.
And all the Disney movies. So that's kind of a good bundle.
That's a good bundle.
Yeah.
One of the other things that we've,
particularly if you've got kids,
going back to is, which we've stated before, if you're going to just go, like you said, throw Linux on it, Linux now includes LibreOffice.
Right, which is free. And
which is already built into it, that if you want it for the average person, we have said out time and time again, the average person doesn't use half of the potential power that's in most word processors or spreadsheets, and as far as macros and all this other stuff. They want it just to do a simple spreadsheet, or they just want to type a letter that they got to send off to this person or that person.
Most of their typing is in their email program.
Yeah.
Maybe a shopping list.
And again, that's all free. You don't have to put up with Microsoft's 360 BS.
I had a very old machine, and in fact, one of these Windows Link devices would be perfect for this, that ran a very lightweight version of Linux, Puppy Linux at the time. I haven't looked at Puppy Linux in years, but I ran Abbey Word, which is a free word processor, and GNUmeric, which is a free spreadsheet. And it did everything I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were very tiny, very lightweight, and very free.
Yeah.
I didn't even need LibreOffice for what I was doing at the time. And most people don't. Most people only ever do email and web surfing and some sort of social media thing.
And they're under the falsehood of thinking, well, it came with the computer, that's the only thing I can use.
Right.
Just like using Explorer or Edge instead of, Chrome or one of these other browsers. And the same with the email programs. They think, well, it came with Microsoft email, so I got to use that. No, you don't.
Right.
They just into a falsehood.
Yep. No, I completely agree with you. So, yeah, if you're looking at
one of the things we're here for is to educate people. You don't have to.
That's exactly.
You don't
right.
have to stick with just the stuff it comes with. There's that's exactly lots right. Of better and often free stuff out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So be
and it works
careful.
Fine, by the way. You know, I mean, you did it for years of doing
years.
Other not Word documents and at the RIT. And nobody knew the difference.
Nobody knew the difference, and nobody, and I was able to read and write documents that everybody using Word could use and see without a problem. And nowadays, you can install the exact same fonts that Microsoft people use. One of the problems that I had very early on was that I didn't have the same exact fonts, so the metrics were a little off. Now you can download the exact same fonts, and they work in exactly the same way. And they look exactly the same from machine to machine. You don't have to worry about any of that anymore. So, yeah, you can download all of those same things without a problem. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbite right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good, you?
Hanging in there. I just got home from work a little while ago and catching some of your show. I'll have to watch the beginning of it.
You work too hard, Fred.
Too old, too soon.
Yeah.
So I caught the part where you're talking about the distro C.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I got a few minutes this afternoon because some other work I was supposed to do this afternoon, they had something come up. So I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing a login. And I'm seeing another thing that says try it for free.
No. Okay, so there's an ad for ThinLink that says try it for free. That's an ad.
Okay. That's an ad.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can ignore that. If you start scrolling down, you'll see a list of all of the various Linuxes alphabetically. So let's say you wanted to try Bazite, which is a gaming Linux. You would click on Bazite, and it would tell you what you can do, how you log in, and blah, 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 and you can go play with it.
Okay. So there's no, so what's the login at the top? Do I need the login? Do I need to create a login?
No. You can. I don't know that I ever did.
That's probably so it will remember which ones you've tried before and send you email on what new ones they get. It's interesting it doesn't say what logging in gets you.
Right, so you click on which one you want, and then it says to start the OS. And it tells you, and I just clicked on Elementary OS, for example. It tells me there are currently 12 users ahead of me. It was 13 when I started talking. And the estimated wait time is 2 minutes. So I can click the blue Start Elementary OS button.
Okay.
And it will put me in the queue.
There's Puppy Linux.
I'm looking at
Pear OS with a bite taken out of the pear like an apple.
There are so many. So you've talked about Linux Mint a lot on the show.
Yep.
And I've been running Ubuntu 2404.
Me too.
And I like it. I don't see any reason to change, but I thought, well, since it's got this option I don't have to download anything. I don't have to put it on a stick. I don't have to do any, you know, real simple, simple, other than, you know, waiting in line. So I thought I'd give it a try, but I was a little, I guess, confused by the login and the...
Yeah, they'll always try to get you to click on an ad, always.
Okay.
And I've never logged into this site. I don't know what the login does for you, except, as Steve said, keep track of what you've seen and maybe gives you priority in the queue, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. So looking at the Linux Mint, there are a dozen options. They all look the same.
Yeah, they're okay. So if you look at the Linux Mint options, on the right you will see a version number: 22.3,
22.2, 22.1. Oh, okay. Mine's on the left. I got it.
On the left. On the left, you will see that, and then next to that, you will see the three flavors.
Right.
There's XFCE, Mate, and Cinnamon. Linux Mint Cinnamon is the one most people use. But they also have Mate, and they also have XFCE. XFCE is what I use on Ubuntu. I use Xubuntu or Xubuntu, or I don't care how you pronounce it.
Okay.
Because I like, it's a very lightweight front end, and back in the day, that was important because I was running it on old hardware. So you pick which version. The current one is 22.3, but if you want to run any one of the older ones, you certainly can. That's why they're all there, and then you just pick the version number and the flavor, and you click that button, and you're in the queue.
Okay. Mate sounds like a tea.
Yes. They are three different versions. The one, like I said, that most people tend to use is cinnamon.
Okay.
But they're all pretty cool. And just pick which one you like and click on it and play with it.
Nice. Nice. So you guys are great.
Thank you.
And everybody should donate.
I agree with you. Thank you. Thank you. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
And I'm waiting for that online class.
Yeah, me too. I'm working on things. Life has happened. But yes, thank you.
Yeah, I understand that. But just figured I'd, you know, throw that out there and see what sticks.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You guys take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of people use the one that seems most popular is Linux Mint Cinnamon, but there are three separate desktops available: Cinnamon, XFCE, and Mate.
Okay, hold on.
And like I said, I began with XFCE 25 years ago because I was running it on old hardware, and it was, you know, I started with KDE rather. And it was just horribly, back in the day, particularly on the hardware I was running it on, it was horribly, horribly, horribly slow. And I couldn't stand it. I almost gave up on Linux entirely. And then I found XFCE, which was much lighter and much better. So that made more sense to me at the time. All right, back to the phones.
So should I go with XFCE or XKCD?
Yeah. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, hi. I've got a very old printer. I don't print very often. Sometimes 3 weeks can go by, even a month or two. And it's an old HP 882 from the year 2000. And I'd like to find a way to keep the cartridges from drying out. Because they do dry out very quickly, whether it's an HP brand cartridge or a third-party cartridge.
Yeah, that's an issue with all liquid inkjet printers. They'll dry out if you don't use them, so the only solution is to keep using them.
On HP's website, they tell you should print something at least once a week.
Once a week, yeah, I guess I could do that.
And basically what they want, what they're really telling you to do is it a black and white or color?
Yeah, it's both. I use them both.
Okay, so it's a color printer. So
yeah.
Find a picture
or
that has
print.
Test print will do it.
Yeah.
So just once a week, run test print
with all four colors on it.
Yeah.
Right. A test. Any print that uses all the colors.
Okay.
And okay, so my recommendation is that in the winter, when the air is drier, you print maybe every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, when the air is moister, you can wait, you know, to do it once a week.
Yeah. The better value idea is to get a laser printer, which doesn't have the ink drying out problem. They cost more up front, but the cost per print is a lot lower, so their value over time is a lot lower than a liquid ink printer.
Right, and it also depends on how much you print.
Yeah, and that's that goes back to an early caller. With the Epson EcoTank printers, someone calculated that the normal print cartridges, which are like half a milliliter, work out to about $5,000 a gallon.
Right.
And so the EcoTank printers, HP has a line of them too, they have extra big ink tanks. And then that you can refill the ink tank with a bottle of ink, and so the cost per print is a lot lower. But it's still liquid ink and still dries out.
Yeah. The thing about the laser printer, it's certainly much more economical, but if you're really looking for photographic quality, you really want an inkjet still better.
Yep. Yeah. Until you get up into the $4,000 or $5,000 laser printers, right.
But yeah, sure. The trade off is you have to print something at least once a week.
Right. I saw someone posted that they take the cartridge and they put it in a plastic bag with a little bit of water in it so that it doesn't dry out.
And then you've diluted the ink and it is
sure.
And the ink that's still in the tubes
yeah, the in print the printer.
Now, I did find, we had a customer with a similar issue. You can find ink print head revival kits, which are basically alcohol. You pull the print head out and you flush it with alcohol to clean out all of the dried up gunk.
And then
put the head back in.
That's pretty fiddly.
And then you get ink everywhere and very mess. Fiddly, yeah.
Yeah, Paul's life is too short to deal with that kind of stuff.
Oh, exactly. So, you know, run test print every few days. Set an alarm on your phone or whatever. Every few days, run a test print, you're done.
No, you'd write a cron job.
I'd write a cron job to do it for me. Exactly right. That is exactly what I would do.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. You got a great show. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, that's when my father-in-law passed, we inherited his lovely HP inkjet printer. He hadn't used it in months.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a paperweight.
And you go through all the cartridges trying to keep running the cleaning cycles. So the cleaning cycle scrapes the crud off the bottom of the... goes to the ink pad, scraping the ink off the bottom of the head.
Right. The easiest thing to do is to every week... They say every week, I say, particularly in Rochester in the summer, every few days, run a test print, or just a quick test print. You know, every print driver on the market has a, you know, test page.
Yeah, because it'll do both the black, and if it's a color printer, it'll print some colored stripes.
Right. And that should do it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Fairport, New York. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, hi, guys. I'm shopping for a El Cheapo deal on a used Chromebook to follow that path you guys have been suggesting. So wondering if you have any tips on that.
For an inexpensive Chromebook?
Yeah.
That's going to be hard nowadays because all the prices have gone up because of the chips going up.
Yeah, right. I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that the 4 megs of RAM and the 32 megs of storage, they're showing the price increases.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go to, for example, Best Buy or Walmart, you will find some inexpensive versions. Be careful. Particularly at Best Buy and Walmart, you should be able to play with them a little bit on display. and decide whether the very, very low end is acceptable to you or if you need to move up a little bit.
How about Amazon?
Well, Amazon, you don't get to test it.
Yeah, sure.
Right. And so that's why I'm saying, you know, if you go to Best Buy or Walmart, you can actually put your fingers on it. But yes, Amazon as well has inexpensive laptops as, too. So, but it, you know, it depends on again, a Chromebook is going to be very like the Windows Link PCs we were talking about. It does a limited number of things, and it does them very well. But you know, a lot of it happens online, and a lot of it happens in the cloud. So you don't have to worry about that speed. But you need a network connection to do it. So depending on what it is you want to do, an inexpensive Chromebook, $130, $150. Dell has a real cheap one for like, no, Walmart has a discounted one for $60.
Yeah, I just saw a couple of those on Woot. It's a third generation Celeron. What are we on, 16 now?
Yes.
With 4 RAM and 16 storage.
Right.
For $50, okay.
Well, and that's exactly right. If that's all you need, check Woot.
Yep.
Right? So that makes sense to me, too. But if you want to put your hands on them, then you want to head over to Walmart or Best Buy and take a look at them on the shelves.
4 megabytes of RAM and 16 megabytes of storage. Is that going to...
That's pretty common. Yeah, that's pretty common.
Okay.
Because you're doing everything, for the most part, up in the cloud. If you're doing any documents or that type of stuff, you just throw it up on your Google Drive.
Yeah, I want to go under 100 as much as I can.
Yeah, good luck. I don't honestly know what you'll find under 100, but you can get close to 100 anyway.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, thanks.
Yep. Yeah. Right. And right now they seem to be on sale, both at Best Buy and Walmart. Interesting.
No, you don't need another laptop.
I do. But it's got to run. It's got to run Linux, so it wouldn't be these. I admit it. I have a problem. My name is Nick, and I buy Chromebooks. I buy laptops. I do, or NUX these days. I was just looking at them again. Looking at eBay, looking at the NUX on eBay. My fingers were itching.
I forgot where he said he was from. Francis.
Okay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Francis. Francis, where are you calling from?
Webster.
Webster, New York?
You
unbelievable.
Got it.
What can we do for you?
The previous caller about the Chromebook.
Yeah.
One thing that I would do is get the model number and go to Google's or wherever and look up the expiration date of that unit, how long it's going to receive updates.
That's a very good point.
Because sometimes you get an old one in the store and it's 2 or 3 years used up already.
That's a very, very good point.
Or you read a lot of problems with it, so that might be a model to stay away from.
Right. So
we have
somewhere we've got the end of life.
Yeah, thing. Chrome end of life.
For Chromebooks, the link for that on our website. Steve's going to look it up and pop it to the top.
I got one for a friend of mine a couple years ago for Black Friday, but... I looked it up, and it was 2 years had been used out of it, but it was still worth it based on the price,
Right. And that's right. You once you have the information, you can make your decision.
Right.
But you got to get the information. That's a very good point, Francis. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Have a good day.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Now, how easy is it to put Linux on a Chromebook?
Not.
Yeah, they really want to run Chrome.
It depends on the model, but you can put Chrome OS on some of them. Chrome OS Flex, I mean, on some of them. But generally speaking, it depends on the model. I've done it to a couple of them, and you have to take them apart. I know Dave's not going to believe I did this. But you got to take them apart, and with some of them, there's a screw that you have to remove that's the right protect screw. with some of them, you disconnect the battery for 48 hours. It depends on depends on the model. And then it will allow you to put on another operating system. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it does not work. I have done both. I have seen both works and not works.
You can attest to both.
I can attest to both. I am here to witness, brothers and sisters. I witness both happening, which is why, while I do love Chromebooks and I believe in Chrome OS Flex as a good choice for very old, very low-powered laptops, I like more powerful laptops and the mini PCs that people are buying these days to put Linux on and run a little better. I have to admit that that while I love Chromebooks, if what you want is a Chromebook, and I, as I've said many times, what I think a Chromebook is best for is when you already have a desktop or a laptop at home, but you want to take something out and you don't much care if it gets banged around a little bit or if something happens to it. So particularly, for example, for students, I used to see a lot of students carrying Chromebooks to class. They've got, an $8,000 gaming rig in their dorm room, but they take a Chromebook to class to take notes on.
Yeah, it's perfect.
It's perfect for that.
Great battery life.
Great battery life, and it's got a keyboard, which is still easier for typing on than a tablet. I don't care what anybody says.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes sense to me. A low-end laptop with Linux on it or Chrome OS Flex or whatever. But the reality is that, as Francis said, if you're going to buy a Chromebook, check the end of life for that particular model to see when it stops getting updates. Now, again, stop getting updates means it doesn't mean it stops working. It just means you don't get the new latest and greatest. And Chromebooks rarely have a serious problem with, for example, viruses or any of that sort of thing, or security issues of any sort.
It's all the fake virus warnings that everyone gets in their web browser.
Right. But so you don't really have to worry about that very much. But you do, if you're concerned about keeping it up to date, check that end of life before you buy a model. I think the new models all have 7 or 8 years of updates, but the older models do not necessarily have that much. So you do want to be a little careful as to what you buy as far as that stuff is concerned. And hardware support as well, right? As I tell everybody who buys a portable device, if you're going to buy a portable device, think about getting the extended warranty. Because drops happen. Breakages happen. We were talking earlier about all the people who have cracked screens on their phones. A replacement screen is very expensive.
Yep.
So, I've had many, many, many devices that did not pass the patented Francesco drop test. when I buy a portable device, I do buy an extended warranty for it.
So it looks like in 2021, Google updated their policy to 10 years of releases.
10 years, nice.
But from the platform's release date.
Right.
So if you buy a 3-year-old computer, you've lost
7 years.
3 of those years, yeah.
Right. So that's why you want to look at the end of life dates for the particular model you've got, and that will help you with that. So. Francis is absolutely right about that. When you're buying a used device, you don't have to worry about that. The likelihood that you have any sort of warranty is nil. Maybe a manufacturer's 30-day warranty kind of thing, but that's about it. But when you're buying a Chromebook, you do get updates. You continue to get updates.
A lot of times the manufacturer refurbished computers do come with a warranty.
Yeah, at least a small, with hardware warranty.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, when people buy old machines with Windows 10 on them, they either have to join the extend the EOL, the EU, whatever it's called, extended
support, update support,
EUS, yeah. Or you know, fly in the wind. And if you buy a Windows 11 machine, you're gonna get support, but you have to worry about that. And with Linux, you always get support. So, you know, and with Macs, it's a hit or miss thing. If you buy an older machine, you don't necessarily have a long support life for that operating system. You may not be able to update it. All right, that music
A 15-year-old computer someone brought in to me yesterday running a 15-year-old OS on it.
Yeah, it's unlikely that updates are going to happen often.
Yeah.
But that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who called in. Great, great stuff this week. I was really, really pleased. Thank you. And we're going to be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbite. So, if you want to join us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. in the lounge, you're welcome to do that. But otherwise, we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?